County League of Women Voters candidate forum starts right now.
PBS North Coast and the League of Women Voters of Humboldt County present a live forum for candidates seeking to be the auditor-controller of Humboldt County. Viewers will have the opportunity to phone in their questions by calling 445-0811. This forum is being simulcast on KHSU 90.5 FM and streamed live by the Stream Guys at our PBSNC.org website. And now your moderator from the League of Women Voters and Heartline.
Good evening. As mentioned, I'm Ann Heartline with the League of Women Voters of Humboldt County. I'd like to welcome all our viewers tonight for a live candidates forum with the two candidates for Humboldt County Auditor Controller. Candidates with us this evening are Mike Lorig and Karen Paz Dominguez. The League of Women Voters, a nonpartisan political organization, encourages informed and active participation in government, works to increase understanding of major public policy issues, and influences public policy through education and advocacy. The League never endorses candidates or political parties. We do take positions on issues after extensive study and member consensus. The League is dedicated to providing impartial information about voting and the political process. Membership in the League is open to all citizens 16 years and older. League members are serving tonight as question sorters, timekeeper, courier, and phone volunteers. Their names will appear in the credits after the program. Since a portion of our program tonight will use questions called in from viewers, I encourage you to begin calling in your questions to 445-0811. Our volunteers are waiting to take your calls. As mentioned also, this production is being simulcast on KHSU 90.5 and streamed live by the Stream Guys. Our forum tonight begins with a one-minute opening statement from each candidate. Opening statements will be followed by a call-in session in which candidates will each respond to questions from you, the viewing public. Each candidate will have 1 minute to answer each question phoned in by viewers. At the end of the question period, each candidate will have 1 minute for a closing statement. The candidates have drawn lots to determine the order of opening and closing statements. And so we'll begin with our first opening statement tonight from Mike Lorig.
Good evening, voters. My name is Mike Lorig, and I'm running for Auditor Controller in Humboldt County. Experience, leadership, and good working relationships are what I believe is missing in the Auditor Controller's office. For the past 13 years, I've been working in the Department of Health and Human Services as an auditor and accountant. I'm a former director of internal audit for a $600 million enterprise. I'm a leader who is problem-solving, results-driven, encourages others, and looks for perspectives, and is a champion of change. I look forward to being an advocate for improvements and enhancements within the Auditor Controller's office and effectively partner with others to achieve the goals of the Auditor's office.
Thank you. We'll have our next opening statement from Karen Paz Dominguez.
Good evening. My name is Karen Paz Dominguez, and I am running for Auditor Controller for Humboldt County. I have lived in Humboldt County for over 12 years. I have earned my Bachelor of Science in Business Administration with an emphasis in accounting from Humboldt State University. My husband and my children live here. This is our home. I have been serving you as the Assistant Auditor Controller, and I've identified an urgent need for the Auditor Controller, the next publicly elected Auditor Controller, to be not only qualified, knowledgeable, and experienced, but also personally invested in the protection of your taxpayer funds. If elected, that will be my priority, is to promote integrity, accountability, and transparency in order to earn your trust and maintain it. Thank you.
All right. We will begin now with our questions from the public. And again, if you have a question for our candidates, please call in your question to 445-0811. And candidates, if at any time you need me to repeat the question, please just let me know. Okay, so we will start with our first question, and Mike Lorig will respond first. And the question is, what are the major challenges for this position?
The challenges as I see them for this office are leadership and experience in the office and collaboration with members of the community and the Board of Supervisors. Without that, there's no chance to move forward. There's no vision that can be handled by the Auditor Controller's office. So that's the biggest problem I see, are those three things.
Thank you. Karen Pazdominguez, your comments, please.
The three major challenges faced by the Auditor Controller at this moment in time would be to redesign the tasks of the office to ensure compliance. To build public trust, there needs to be more public engagement and transparency for the public. There also needs to be participation in the decision-making process for the Board of Supervisors. I believe the Auditor Controller's office has not been able to participate in prior decision-making processes, and it should. We are the watchdogs, and I intend to do that. So the three major challenges are compliance, communication, and involvement.
For our next question, we will begin with Karen Pazdominguez. And the question is, how large is the office, for example, the number of employees, and is this adequate to get the job done?
Beginning on Monday, we're going to have 13 and a half permanent employees. We have three extra help employees. These would be temporary positions. And we have one DHHS employee, the Department of Health and Human Services, serving in our office under a memorandum of understanding. Right now, we are short-staffed only because there is a lot of complexities in just becoming compliant with a lot of government codes. Also because we serve not just the county departments, but the special districts and the schools districts. I think the top priority should be focusing on retention and training, and ideally we would have additional staff to be able to provide a comprehensive annual financial report to the public.
Thank you. Mike Lorig, your comments, please.
Would you repeat the question?
Certainly. How large is the Auditor Controller office, as in number of employees, and is this adequate to get the job done?
The number of employees in the auditor's office right now is an adequate number, but it needs to be augmented with additional help and combination of services within other departments in the county. 13.1 people is a good number. It doesn't need any more for that particular department. The jobs and duties are pretty well assigned in the office. So other than increasing relationships with other departments to allow staff to be used, cross-used, I think 13 is a good number for that. Thank you.
For our next question, we will begin with Mike Lorig. And the question is, have you had experience running a department within a governmental agency previously?
I have not experienced in running a department within governmental, but I have run companies and enterprises with 20 or more staff reporting to me. I understand the problems of personnel issues. I understand problem resolution, how to be results-driven, how to be inclusive in the issues that may arise in personnel. I look for diversity of opinion, and I champion change.
Karen Pazdominguez, your comments, please.
Will you please repeat the question?
I certainly will. Have you had experience running a department within a governmental agency previously?
Oh. As the Assistant Auditor Controller, I do have experience. I'm already in the department. I am second in command under the publicly elected Auditor Controller. And I do oversee the five divisions of the Auditor Controller's office. The staff varies from work experience, educational background, and we've been very successful in managing the tasks of the office and cross-training employees to ensure that everyone's skills are being fully utilized to complete the tasks. So, yes, I am experienced in handling this specific department.
Thank you. I want to remind our viewing public that you are welcome to phone in your questions for these candidates. And again, that phone number is 445-0811. Our next question will begin with Karen Paz-Dominguez. Are there specific areas that need additional attention within the Auditor-Controller Department?
Training needs to be a main focus. Government accounting is ever-changing. Every year there's new rules, there's new guidelines, specifically for auditing and also for accounting. There also needs to be a focus on employee retention and improving employee morale. For too long, the staff and the auditor controller have been overworked, and there's a lot of stress and pressure to get things done in a timely manner. I think they need to have the support to be able to make decisions and not have to wait and hear from other people when they are fully capable of making those knowledgeable decisions. I'm nervous. I'll leave it there.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Mike Lorig, your comments, please.
Would you repeat the question?
Sure. Are there specific areas that need additional attention within the Auditor-Controller Department?
If your personnel issues, leadership requirements would need attention, there are definite tensions going on in the office. There are additional requirements for new accounting policies, new procedures. So there is a problem there. I'm going to leave it at that.
All righty. Okay, we'll go to our next question, and we'll start with Mike Lorig. What training would increase the efficiency of the auditor's office, and why?
Training across the board. Staff needs training, but the current budget within the auditor controller's office doesn't allow for that. I would like to see employees and the staff utilize what the county offers in terms of additional training and money to do that. There is a personnel policy that allows them to go to the county directly for programs. I would also entertain the idea of me establishing a library for the employees to look at so that they can take, for instance, the Certified Government Finance Officer Association certification, which I would support wholeheartedly with those employees that would like to do that, as well as in the city and other within Eureka and other community offices.
Karen Paz-Dominguez, your thoughts, please.
Will you repeat the question?
Yes. The question is, what training would increase the efficiency of the auditor's office and why?
The training that would increase efficiency would be the Government Accounting Standards Board issues pronouncements on a regular basis that determine the correct way to report financial data for pensions, for financial statements, for payroll. There's also the federal regulations, state regulations, even the county regulations. I think there needs to be training on being able to read those and interpret those and apply them. There's also a need to have basic accounting training for the people who didn't emphasize in accounting in their studies. People who have started as fiscal assistants who were kind of just thrust into the world of accounting without having the support to learn basic accounting theory. There's also a need for training when it comes to the board county code and board ordinances to make sure that we're within compliance with not only the federal and state regulations, but also what the board has placed as guidelines for how we operate.
All right. Our next question, and we'll start with Karen Paz-Dominguez. This is future planning. What are the greatest needs in the department to ensure the department's future success?
Continued training, resources to complete the work, for example, having up-to-date cabling in the office, up-to-date equipment to run the programs. There needs to be open communication between the auditor's office and all the departments which it governs, along with special districts and schools districts, and there needs to be public engagement also.
Mike Lorig, your thoughts, please.
The position really requires leadership. It's planning for the future. It's how we can change the office to deliver more services for the same cost or lesser cost while enhancing the delivery of what we produce. There are methods and possibilities within the county to enhance and be inclusive in other areas that would really benefit the auditor controller's office in the future. We have different places that are producing the same product that could be combined and make the office itself more efficient. So there are a lot of, there's a vision that needs to be had about what you want to do going forward.
Thank you. Before I state the next question, audience, please remember, we're looking for your questions, and the number to call here is 445-0811. And we thank you for watching and participating. All right, for our next question, we'll start with Mike Lorig. How important is the controller's relationship with members of the Board of Supervisors to being successful in their work? And please explain.
It's critical that the auditor controller works jointly with members of the Board of Supervisors. You have to communicate with them on a daily basis to achieve the desired actions of the auditor controller's office. If there's conflict, if there's miscommunication, that slows down what the auditor's office can actually do. We're there to serve the Board of Supervisors and to serve all the other departments within the county. And if we don't communicate well with any of those units, we are not doing the job that the auditor's office needs to do.
Karen Paz-Dominguez, your thoughts, please.
Considering that the Board of Supervisors makes decisions on how public funds are spent, it is crucial to maintain the open lines of communication between the Auditor Controller's Office and the Board of Supervisors. I will also mention that all five positions in the Board of Supervisors and the Auditor Controller are publicly elected. We answer to the same people, and that is the taxpayers. That's the voters. It's important for it to be a two-way street. The Auditor Controller is tasked with providing correct and relevant financial information to the Board of Supervisors for them to make informed decisions, and it's the Board of Supervisors' responsibility to reach out to the Auditor Controller to make sure that they're interpreting the information correctly to make the best sound decisions that will hopefully benefit the county organization as well as the residents and the special districts within the county.
Our next question will begin with Karen Paz-Dominguez. Would a forensic audit be appropriate because of recently reported issues at the auditor's office?
It depends. A forensic audit can examine just the financial data that's coming out of the department, or it can focus on internal controls within the auditor controller. It could examine management applications, efficiency. A forensic audit can take many different forms. In terms of the financial information, we already do have an external independent audit that comes out every year. There's a single audit done by the federal government, and it's to account for or to make sure that the accounting for expenditures over $750,000 of federal funds are recorded accurately. I think a forensic audit would be helpful if it is very specific about what its purpose is. If the purpose is to increase efficiency, then a forensic audit should focus on management applications and internal controls. As far as financial information, just to make sure it's accurate, that's already being completed by our independent external auditors.
All right, Mike Lorig, your
thoughts,
please.
Would you repeat that question again?
Yes, indeed. Would a forensic audit be appropriate because of recently reported issues at the auditor's office?
Forensic audit would be appropriate. We do need something to look at the office to see whether what's established in the office is being followed, policies and procedures. We need some kind of a report because there have been difficulties within the office. We just need somebody outside of Board of Supervisors, outside of the county, to come in and take a look and give a report so that the state of the auditor controller's office becomes transparent to the public and is communicated to the public. So, yeah, I believe there is one that's due.
All right, our next question will begin with Mike Lorig. Humboldt County is one of the largest and most complex county agencies. How important is it to be familiar with the structure of Humboldt County government?
It becomes important because Humboldt County is one of 5 counties in the state that actually has a Department of Health and Human Services. That's a combination of multiple departments that only 5 counties have in the state, which makes it a very large appropriately managed operation. It tends to make the idea or cause the activities within other departments to be overlooked sometimes. We are a really big organization, 160 million with the Department of Health and Human Services. So it's really important to know what each of those units are actually doing on a day-to-day basis. Thank you.
Karen Pastamigas, your thoughts, please.
Will you please repeat the question?
Certainly. Humboldt County is one of the largest and most complex county agencies. How important is it to be familiar with the structure of Humboldt County government?
It is crucial to know and understand the structure of county government. When I started my position as the Assistant Auditor Controller, I did place special emphasis on studying board governance as it is determined by county code. I did examine thoroughly that binder that this comes out of the county administrative office. It's a budget and then adopted budget by the Board of Supervisors. It shows the different departments within this organization. It's important to know the difference between the departments and the divisions. It's important to know the difference between the appointed offices and the publicly elected offices. It's important to know the difference between the special districts and the schools districts. And it's also very important to keep in mind that the different cities and unincorporated areas that comprise the county are not going to be apples and oranges. Some are bigger, some are smaller, and that makes a very big difference when apportioning tax revenues and when applying the sales tax, like Measure Z, when that's distributed. You cannot perform the jobs of the auditor controller if you don't have a basic understanding of county government, and you can't be efficient and successful if you don't have a critical knowledge of it.
Our next question will begin with Karen Paz-Dominguez. Please say more about the issue of compliance with governmental codes.
Please say more. In general? Okay.
Yeah, I assume that they're talking recent, within the recent past.
Okay. There are government codes that are coming from the state. There's a code that come from county code that the board has approved. It's important to know the difference about which ones apply when. In terms of compliance, there are some government codes that the state has imposed on the county that the Board of Supervisors has amended or chosen to distribute the responsibility differently. So it's important to understand that while we are complying with county codes, sometimes it'll contradict what state code says. And then also considering that there's federal regulations that must be observed. Without a specific question, I could talk about government codes for hours. perhaps the person who provided that question will tell me exactly what they want to hear, because then I can provide an answer.
Mike Lorig, your thoughts, please.
Do you want to give me that question?
Sure. It says, please say more about the issue of compliance with governmental codes.
The county, of course, has to comply with federal and state codes. It also has to comply. One of those compliances is a super circular for Office of Management and Budget that requires the county act in a certain way for the money that it receives. Just like there are other ordinances that come from the state that require accounting and reporting back to the state and back to the federal government. We have to be compliant with those requests. If we're not, then we have issues from the state and from the federal government to resolve those issues, and that becomes costly. So we must be compliant with those regulations. Thank you.
Our next question will start with Mike Lorig. What is your management style, and how would you implement that style if you were elected as auditor controller?
That's a question of leadership. I'm participatory. I involve individuals. The people who do the work have to solve the problem and have to be guided to come up with a solution that they can implement, that can be monitored. So it's participatory, it's inclusive, it's friendly. All of those kinds of things that involve an individual in actually executing the program that they need to be responsible for.
Thank you. Karen Paz-Dominguez, your comments, please.
Will you please repeat?
Certainly. What is your management style, and how would you implement that style if you were elected as auditor-controller?
As a manager, I have focused on consensus as my preferred method of decision-making. I involve all the staff in any decision that's going to affect them personally as well as affecting other county departments. I seek input from everyone who will be affected, input from all stakeholders who just want to provide opinions. My goal is to have everyone in the office feel like they're being listened to, feel like they contributed, and even if they don't necessarily agree, they do feel like they had an opportunity to voice their concerns. My management style is one of, I need to know that every task is being completed. So I make lists, I make deadlines, and I make sure that that information is disseminated to all the staff so that they're able to meet the expectations of them. Similarly, I try to develop corrective action plans when tasks are not being met. It is important that the person in the auditor-controller position is able to be firm in what needs to be completed because so many people depend on those tasks to be completed accurately.
Thank you. Before I get to the next question, viewers, we're at about the halfway point, and we'd like to encourage you to call in your questions. Remember, that phone number is 445-0811. Thank you. Our next question, and we'll begin with Karen Paz-Dominguez. What would be your first steps if you discovered a misappropriation of funds?
I need to verify. If I'm the one that identified something, I'm of course going to investigate until I am certain that there has been a misappropriation of funds, and then I would tackle the issue head on, meaning I would talk to the department that's responsible for it or anyone who participated in the misappropriation of funds. I would of course inform the Board of Supervisors, inform the County Administrative Officer. I would seek input from our external auditors. I would seek, I would use all the resources available provided by the federal and state government to make sure that those issues are being addressed and corrected. I also think it's important for the public to be made aware when these things happen, not a year down the road after an audit report has been issued, but in real time. I think that a government that is funded by the people needs to serve those people. And when there is a misappropriation of funds, that is a very serious issue that must be addressed. Thanks.
Mike Lorg, your thoughts, please.
Of course, I'd investigate. There are a couple of things. What are the policies and procedures? What was violated? What internal controls were violated? And at what level those internal controls were violated to get misappropriation of funds? I would look at the conditions, the criteria, the cause, the effect, and draft a recommendation and give that to the Board of Supervisors while keeping the board and management fully advised of what was discovered and what the ongoing process is to resolve the issue so that we don't have it happen again. If we have to handle work with that individual or the supervisor of that individual, that would be a very important thing to do.
Our next question will begin with Mike Lorig. How old is the technology and software, et cetera, in the department? Does it need to be updated? And what might be those costs?
I wouldn't know about the cost to replace it. I do know that we're running on a version of software that is fairly old. It's been updated recently, but it's still old. It has a lot of capacity that's not being used, and the capacity is not being used because when the accounting system was originally designed, it was never designed to handle modern-day technology. We're still working with very old policies and procedures and general ledger accounting. There are a lot of things that can be done. The cost would be, I'm not going to say prohibitive, but it'd have to be shared throughout the county. And it could be investigated because that's something that should be looked at.
Karen Paz Dominguez, your thoughts, please.
Will you please repeat the question?
Certainly. How old is the technology, software, hardware, et cetera, in the department? Does it need to be updated, and can you give an idea of approximate costs?
There are several softwares used in the Auditor Controller Department and also different interfaces with other departments. The main accounting software we use is OneSolution. It is fairly up to date. The most recent version is more of a web-based forum. We don't use that. We use the one that's installed on the computers, and we use it using the network from IT. The property tax software we use is called Megabyte, and that's kept regularly up to date. There are updates every week. The interfaces we share with Public Works is called the Cost Accounting Management System, and we're developing a process for it to be able to communicate better with our current accounting software. If we're talking about the cabling in the office, it is very outdated. We're running on Category 3 cables, and last I heard, the newest stuff is Category 6. The software we use requires at minimum Category 5 cables, so we are very behind the times with the cabling. And it's going to cost about $20,000 to have those cables updated. The software, I think there's no cost now. There's only cost if you want to add more modules.
For our next question, we'll start with Karen Paz Dominguez. Why do you want to be auditor controller?
Oh, I have a passion for auditing. It is my favorite of all the accounting focuses. I want to be the auditor controller because I see this as a perfect opportunity for me to share my skills to benefit my community. I believe in transparency. I believe in the people. I believe in responsibility. I believe in integrity. And these are all things that the Auditor Controller's office was designed to do. I have the energy, I have the stamina, I have the know-how to bring this department into compliance, to bring it into the future. I want to develop sustainable practices so that we're not being wasteful and inefficient. I feel like this is my calling. I am ready to be the auditor controller. If I'm not the publicly elected controller right now, I already feel like I am, because I take such a personal investment in the success of this office.
Mike Lurk, your thoughts, please.
I want to be the auditor controller because, again, I have the same passion. Over 38 years worth of passion doing auditing, doing business controller, management. I've spent, like I said, 38 years doing this. I've been an auditor for, director of internal audit for 6 years with a major corporation. It's a passion. I like to deal with people in how we do what we do and why we do it. It's really gets me going in the morning. I can talk for hours sometimes about why I like to do this job. I've been here in the county since 1972, and I've seen a lot of different things going on. And I've always been passionate about what I do in accounting.
Our next question, we'll start with Mike Lurk. How would you implement collaboration with other offices?
I'd communicate with the other offices on a regular basis. I'd go to their office rather than coming to mine. It's a two-way street. I have to meet them. They have to meet me. We can talk. We have to communicate about what we're trying to achieve, and then we have to achieve it. We have to be results-oriented, and that's what communication is all about, is to get a result from what you want to do, which means you've got to be supportive of others, you've got to be inclusive of different opinions, and then you've got to be champion those changes that you're talking about when you're collaboratively working with other units.
Karen Paz Dominguez, your input, please.
Will you please repeat the question?
Certainly. How would you implement collaboration with other offices?
When I started as the Assistant Auditor Controller, I reached out to other divisions and other offices to understand how they work and how the work that they produce relates to ours and how the work we do can be a benefit to them in an effort to improve efficiency within the county organization as a whole. I've hosted trainings to all fiscal staff in the departments, and we intend to do a year-end kickoff in a couple weeks introduce the Auditor Controller Department again to all the departments and to offer them buy-in, an opportunity to tell us how they want to, how they want the year-end process to go. Additionally, if I'm elected auditor controller, I want to participate more in the HUM 21 group, which is designed to build collaboration and teamwork for county employees. I also want to have a newsletter where we're keeping people informed about the happenings in the auditor controller department. I want to host more trainings. I want to go to their trainings. There's no reason why the departments need to be separated as much as they are. I think everyone would benefit from understanding each other's tasks and collaborating.
Our next question, and we'll begin with Karen Paz Dominguez. What is the relationship between the Auditor Controller's Office and the Treasurer's Office and the Assessor's Office?
The three offices you mentioned are tasked with property taxation, assessing property tax by their values, ensuring that those property taxes are collected and put into the county pool and invested wisely. That's what the treasurer's office does. The assessor is the one who assesses the values to the properties. What the auditor does is make sure that those funds are recorded correctly, distributed correctly. We calculate bonds for the special districts. There's one department that's also part of this, and that's the clerk recorder. They're the ones who track the ownership of properties, and that's what we use to know who to charge and who to bill and who to refund. So it's actually a collaboration between four offices that take in property tax monies.
Mike Lorig, your thoughts, please.
Would you repeat that question?
Sure. What is the relationship between the Auditor Controller's Office and the Treasurer's Office and the Assessor's Office?
It's a collaboration. The Treasurer's Office records revenues and receipts into the county. It records property tax receipts. It notifies the Auditor Controller's Office of those receipts. And the Auditor's Office then, for property tax, does the allocations for those taxes. And what was the third department?
Assessor's Office.
Assessor's Office. They actually, as said, they assess the receipt of taxes and how they're accounted for. So that it's an interrelationship. They work together. And it really takes a collaboration and a group effort to make it work.
For our next question, we'll begin with Mike Lorig. What support is available for the Auditor Controller, and how would you use it?
There are various kinds of support. Some things that we're not using right now, we could be using for support for the office, for instance, to assist staff by going to maybe CR or HSU and creating relationships with them to add staff on a basis to cover shortfalls or issues within the auditor's office that need to be worked on. There's additional resources that the board should probably come up with to assign more staff to the office on a temporary basis to solve problems. So there are different ways of getting support to the office, and that's about it.
Karen Paz Dominguez, your thoughts, please.
Will you repeat the question?
Yes, indeed. What support is available for the Auditor Controller, and how would you use it?
There's support for the Auditor Controller, and there's, what are they called? There's acronyms. CSAC, is the County Association of Auditor Controllers, or Society of Auditor Controllers. There's also the Association of Counties. There's public forums where auditor controllers from different counties can discuss issues and work together to solve a specific county's problems. As an accountant, I'm a member of several organizations, one for being an enrolled agent, one for the Cal CPA group as a candidate for the Certified Public Accountant license. There's also resources within the county organization, people who have been there for a very long time, who have seen things, who know if they've worked and why they haven't worked. There's people who have done the trial and error phase of any project. They're a perfect resource. There's the accounting manual provided by the state controller's office. There's the federal register provided by the Office of Management and Budget. There's plenty of resources already available, and it takes somebody who is willing to read them and establish those relationships with the organizations.
Our next question will begin with Karen Paz Dominguez. This is a little bit longer one, so okay. I'll see if I can get this right. Given the grand jury's report that the unfunded pension liability of $232 million could decimate county services within 5 years, what is the role of the auditor-controller in keeping the public notified of the financial impact of this condition?
The unfunded pension liability is actually more than $250 million at this point. There's actually brilliant people in the auditor-controller's office. The payroll manager came up with a brilliant idea to save money by making one lump sum payment at the beginning of a year for the unfunded liability, and it's going to save over $500,000 in convenience fees for just being able to make payments every month. What that means, though, it's a hit to our cash, but we wouldn't generate enough interest to cover what we would be saving if we make that lump sum payment. Every year there's a valuation report that is generated when they do a study of the how much we owe and what the current balance is. I think that should be made publicly available if it isn't already. And there's also a CalPERS statement that shows what our ongoing balance is. If elected, I could definitely see to providing that statement on a monthly basis using our webpage to keep the public informed.
Mike Lorg, your thoughts, please.
I want to read that question again.
You bet.
That's a long one.
It is. So I'll read the whole thing. Given the grand jury's report that the unfunded pension liability of $232 million could decimate county services within 5 years, what is the role of the auditor controller in keeping the public notified of the financial impact of this situation?
The auditor controller...
condition, sorry.
In the pension shortfall, should be regularly working with the Board of Supervisors and the all staff to make sure that the current pension payments are made. We also have a commitment to fund additional pension costs directly from the county that goes into a separate account. All of that information should be part of a report that is available to the county and voters to come into the auditor's office to see how that is being funded and whether we're maintaining the agreed upon funding rate for that shortfall.
All right, our next question, another long one, and we'll start with Mike Lorig on this. Are there ways your leadership can have any impact on our capacity to respond to social challenges, which are the responsibility of the county government, whether job creation, foster care, homelessness, etc.? And if you can provide examples, that'd be appreciated.
Read that to me. That's a long question again,
too. It is
too.
A long one. So basically it's... are there any ways your leadership can have any impact on our capacity to respond to social challenges, which are the responsibility of the county government? Things like job creation, foster care, homelessness.
The auditor's office, under my leadership, I would ask the employees to be aware of what the county needs and to keep an open mind about what they can provide in terms of assistance to individuals in the county, and to, if they have an idea, to bring it forward so that we can take it to the appropriate agencies to see whether that could be incorporated into the actions that the division or Department for Social Services or Public Health or Mental Health could actually integrate into their services.
Karen Pastominguez, your thoughts, please.
That was a long one. Please read it to me.
No problem. So, are there ways your leadership can have any impact on our capacity to respond to social challenges, which are the responsibility of the county government, whether it be job creation, foster care, homelessness, etc.?
Absolutely. As an auditor controller, while it is a nonpartisan office, we'd have to be careful to not... start making decisions based on party dynamics. But that that person in auditor controller position can still encourage the employees to participate, to be civically engaged. Because an auditor controller is seen as a public figure with a platform, it would be important to not stay silent when there are obvious issues going on that affect county residents. I think my leadership style would be one that promotes public engagement, promotes employee engagement in civic matters, and also would, you know, as the auditor controller, if I'm sticking just to that function, the Board of Supervisors is tasked with participating in negotiation for labor organizations. They depend on the information that comes out of the auditor controller's office to be accurate in order to make those decisions. Similarly, the groups that are negotiating need that information to be fair and accurate. So in that sense, the auditor controller would play a significant role in addressing social issues.
Our next question, and we'll begin with Karen Paz Dominguez. The audited financial statement for June 30th, 2017 had findings of material weaknesses. What is your plan for fixing the findings?
Those findings have been the same for over 8 years, I think, at this point. They talk about internal controls, the recording of interfund transfers, the disaggregation of receivables. I already have a plan. It's written down. I'm just itching to implement it, where we're recording transactions accurately, transfers to transfers, reimbursements to reimbursements. I don't want to record revenue unless it is actually revenue. I don't want to record costs unless we've actually incurred the costs. There's also findings about too many trust funds. I happen to agree. There's a complicated fund structure already within government accounting. It doesn't help that we have over 300 funds when there isn't a need for them. I would also focus on training, because a lot of employees have difficulty in understanding the difference between the general fund, enterprise funds, fiduciary funds, agency funds. I could keep going.
Thank you for sticking to the time.
Yes.
So, Mike Lorig, your comments,
please. You want to read that question again?
You bet. The audited financial statement for June 30th, 2017 had findings of material weaknesses. What is your plan for fixing the findings?
As Karen has stated, those findings have been going on for at least 12 years. They've been exactly the same. They've been complaining about not having sufficient staff to handle the work. We need to cover that shortfall in people by properly using the staff that we have, or augmenting them from staff from other departments to help us do that job. There should be a plan in place to resolve them. I have a plan in place for the Board of Supervisors, for the Auditor Controller's Office, and for activities that the audited financial statements come out with that needs to be done. The system itself is old and needs to be revised.
Our next question, I have a feeling this will be, we'll have this question and another one before we go to closing statements. And we'll start with Mike Lorig on this. Who are your endorsers, and do any of the current staff members of the Auditor Controller's Office support your candidacy?
I have many friends, relations throughout the county, from Garberville up to Trinidad, that are supporters of me. I have four of the five board members who have given me their support. So my biggest backer is my wife, of course. After that, it's the rest of the family members. I constantly meet people who say, "We're glad you're running. We need somebody to represent the community, because they just don't understand the language that's being used, and we need to make sure that communication and that support is spread throughout the county," which, because my support is throughout the county, I'm well able to handle.
All right. Karen Paz Dominguez, your thoughts, please, your response.
Yes. I am currently endorsed by the Humboldt County Democrats, the Green Party of Humboldt County, the North Coast People's Alliance, and the Humboldt and Del Norte Central Labor Council. If you stay tuned to my website or my Facebook page, next week I'll have an update on more endorsements. You asked about staff. There are several staff members who are supportive of my bid for Auditor Controller. I won't name them publicly because I didn't ask permission, but there's a lot of energy behind my campaign. I think there's a lot of people who would be very excited to see me in Auditor Controller. Oh, and I'm sure my husband, too. I would bet he's probably supportive.
All right. And I think this will be our last question. Maybe I can squeeze in another one. We'll see if Keith gives me permission. But just in case, so we'll start with Karen Paz-Dominguez on this. How would you engage other departments, including the CAO and Board of Supervisors, for visioning the best possible future for Humboldt County?
I do know that the CAO office puts together department head meetings to discuss how we're going to communicate and how we're supposed to engage with each other. There's also the HUM 21 group. It's a intranet forum where the county employees can communicate. If elected auditor controller, I would, of course, participate in those events. I also would reach out to the other department heads and just see what's up, see what they're doing, see what their expectations of the auditor controller's office is. I have every intention to be engaged with every department within the county and the special districts too.
Mike Lurk, your response, please. Sure. How would you engage other departments, including the CAO and Board of Supervisors, for visioning the best possible future for Humboldt County?
I would make it my business to visit with each of the members of the Board of Supervisors, with the CAO, to involve them in actions within the Auditor Controller's Office, to make sure that they're consistent with what the Board and the CAO can support, so that we can achieve the goals of the Board and serve the county at the same time. Without that communication on a regular basis, we run into problems. With no communication, we have serious problems. I would also go visit by foot the various departments and divisions throughout the county to solicit their opinion as to what might make the Auditor Controller's Office serve them better. We need to do that.
Well, they've given me word that I can't ask you any more questions, so we're going to be going into our closing statements at this time in order to close in a timely manner. But I will say, candidates, that the questions, the remaining questions that I have here definitely have to do with qualifications and the possibility of your certifications. So if you care to address those in your closing statements, that would be appreciated if it works out. So we'll begin our closing statements now with Mike Lurk.
In closing, I'd like to say that experience, leadership, and good working relationships are necessary in the Auditor Controller's Office. In addition to having significant experience in governmental accounting the last 13 years and demonstrated leadership skills, to bring real change to the office, you need to build, maintain, and manage good working relationships with people at all levels of government and the community. I know that good leaders create partnerships and effectively use the resources that are readily available. I've dedicated a big portion of my life to protecting taxpayer money, and I'm excited about the opportunity to use my working knowledge and experience and leadership and enthusiasm to serve the community, and I would be honored to get your vote.
Karen Paz-Dominguez, your closing comments, please.
I would like to thank the League of Women Voters for this opportunity, as well as KHSU, the Stream Guys, and all the volunteers here in the studio. I have had a lot of fun, and I wish it could keep going. I want to thank the viewers for taking the time to watch us and learn about us. I welcome you to search about us on the Internet or on wherever else you would search. In terms of qualifications, because you guys care, I am an auditor, I am an accountant, I am a federally licensed enrolled agent, and I plan to bring all those skills into the office to make sure that the auditor controller is working for you. So I encourage you to find out more about me, more about Mr. Lurk, and I encourage you to participate at the Board of Supervisors meetings. If I'm open, if you have questions, please find me on my website or on Facebook, just Google my name. And if you vote for me, you can be assured, and if I win, of course, you can be assured that you will have an auditor controller who is working for you to protect your taxpayer funds. Thank you very much.
Thank you both. This concludes tonight's program. I'd like to thank Key TV for airing this forum to encourage voters to participate in government and become more informed. I'd like to urge all our viewers to consider contributing to KEAT TV. It is through viewer memberships and contributions that KEAT TV can continue to present these programs, which are so important to our community. By the way, membership in the League of Women Voters is open to all citizens 16 years or older. If you would like more information about the League, please call 444-9252 or write to us at P.O. Box 3219, Eureka, California. Also, check out our website at www.lwvhc.org. Our website includes a complete schedule of upcoming candidate forums, as well as additional information about our League. I, too, would like to thank those of you who took the time to phone in your questions. We have all gotten a clearer picture of the issues in our community and the challenges in this job, thanks to your questions. I do want to inform viewers also that the website previously known as Smart Voter is now Voters Edge. The web address for this important site is votersedge.org/CA. If you go to that website, you can type in your address and see what's on your ballot and get information about the candidates. Thank you all for watching, and please vote on June 5th. Power is in your vote.